Welcome to another episode of Sharing the Hope from the Mike and Mason Foundation. I'm your host, Patrick. And today we are interviewing Kimberly Pike. Kimberly began her career in pediatric cardiac intensive care as a bedside nurse caring for patients from birth to young adulthood who required open heart surgery and transplants. She worked as a bedside nurse and charge nurse on the floor for just shy of a decade before making the decision to transition to the outpatient world. Having been so embedded in the world of congenital heart disease, she could not go far, and she continued to work specifically with the single ventricle population as a nurse coordinator, doing education with families prior to discharge, home monitoring during the interstage period, and following them through Norwood, Glen, and Fontan until transition to an adult congenital program. She has a special passion for education and is deeply involved with nursing education on both her old floor and has taught for 7 years at a university as well in their school of nursing. So welcome to the show, Kimberly. Did I get all that right?
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. So did I miss anything? I want to make sure if there's anything.
No, I think you nailed it. That's pretty much the story of the last 10, 11 years of my life.
All right. So how did you first come to learn about congenital heart defects and the single ventricle problem in particular?
I wasn't really exposed to the world of congenital heart disease until I was in nursing school. And then it's a fairly brief overview, but I was able to shadow the cardiac care unit at Lurie Children's during one of my pediatric rotations. And that is kind of what really first exposed me to how many kids have congenital heart disease. And that's what really piqued my interest.
Okay. And then I'm assuming you learned about the single ventricle folks while you were there.
Yeah, I didn't learn about the whole world of single ventricle heart disease until I started my first nursing job on the cardiac intensive care unit. I really didn't know what I was getting myself into.
Yeah, I could see that. It's a common feeling. I guess take us through your medical career, like coming in brand new and then how you sort of evolved over time.
Yeah. Throughout college, nursing was never really on my radar at all. Medicine wasn't something I thought I would be involved in. My first degree is a psychology degree. I knew I wanted to work with children. I've always worked with kids, taught them figure skating, nannied, love kids. But my path took me into medicine, and I graduated with my bachelor's in psych and then did some more pre-medical courses and decided nursing was the way to go. Again, I knew the population I wanted to work with was kids. So it was really just trying to narrow down which population I wanted to work with. I was doing a rotation in the oncology floor and got to shadow in the cardiac ICU for a few hours. And I can't recall precisely what it was, but I just knew that is where I was supposed to be. So I started volunteering and networking and doing all of the things to get a job on that unit. And like I said, I really didn't know what I was signing myself up for. It's an intense world, especially as a new graduate nurse. Walking into an ICU, you don't know what you don't know. And it takes you a long time to learn everything that you need to learn in order to provide a top level of care to the sickest of patients. So for a number of years, I was mainly focusing on learning, trying to understand how to better take care of these patients and having to learn all the different heart defects. And, you know, before the start of my shift, I would have to sit down and say, if I was a red blood cell, how do I go through my patient's heart? And it took a long time probably about 5 years before I really felt confident walking into any scenario, any room, and being able to really walk through any heart defect and situation with a deep understanding. It was a roller coaster, but it was exactly where I was meant to be. And I'm so passionate about it. And I'm so passionate about those patients. I think what it really taught me was how resilient kids and families are. And there was, you know, you experience a lot of heartbreak when you work in an ICU, but there were so many moments of just hope and laughter. And I think that's why I love working with those kids so much.
Okay. So you did cardiac ICU for almost a decade.
Yeah, about 10 years I worked on the floor. And as I got more confident, I just kind of started dipping my toes into different areas. So I got super passionate about education, nursing education, family advocacy and education. I was the education chair on the floor for a number of years and was helping hold quarterly education events, doing a lot of precepting, teaching for a university, trying to just engage and inspire other nurses and convince them to go into pediatrics. And then you start to get trained on more and more devices and you start to take care of a higher acuity of patients. And I became a charge nurse and started getting involved in nursing professional governance and house-wide projects. And I always just kept really busy, and I still do, I guess.
That's good. So where did you go from the CICU?
You know, I think any nurse who spends a long time in the intensive care unit of any sort can agree with the fact that you start to experience a little bit of burnout. It can be pretty emotionally draining and physically taxing. So after about 10 years, I was looking for a different avenue that might be a little gentler on my body and my mind. I just knew I didn't want to leave that population of patients. And I didn't want to work for so many years to understand and learn about them and not use that for the next part of my career. So a position opened up on our single ventricle team for a nurse coordinator, and it was perfect. It was like the one job that popped up over a few years that I was kind of looking at options that I just immediately was like, oh, that's what I want to do. It still lets me be involved with these parents and these patients and education, but I get to see them outside of the hospital and I get to see them thrive and help them get through that period of their life. It was a perfect role for me to transition into, and definitely still stressful and definitely isn't like working at a library or anything, but it was a smooth transition and I really just jumped right in. And then because I spent so much time teaching people about these defects and understanding these kids, it's really made it easy for me to teach families and keep them safe at home. And I've been able to take so many of my skills from the bedside and translate them into a success in my ambulatory job. And I didn't really think that that would happen. But when I'm trying to triage a Norwood over the phone, all that bedside experience does come in handy, I've learned.
Okay, so you moved into the, I'm trying to get the word, what you call it, a single ventricle
nurse coordinator.
Was that a new role at the time, or was that, had that been vacated by somebody? Had that already been set up?
We already had a wonderful nurse coordinator, my coworker, Amanda Snyder. She helped start the single ventricle program at Lurie Children's and was the first nurse coordinator. So she has been a wonderful wealth of knowledge for me and really helped guide me through this process. But their patient load was really growing and they needed help. They needed more people to help care for the families that they were taking on. So the year that I joined, they actually doubled the team. So they added a second nurse practitioner, a second nurse coordinator, and now we're a group of four nurses who care for these kiddos on the outside of the hospital.
Okay. Is there a single ventricle clinic or a Fontan clinic there that mm-hmm. you guys interface with?
Yes. Yes. We have a team of physicians who we partner with, and we have two different clinics. We have what we call our heart clinic. It's our high acuity transition clinic that's for our interstage patients. And we also see our Glenn patients there. And then we have our big kid single ventricle clinic, which is our Fontan clinic. We separate them just because while it's all single ventricle heart disease, it really requires two very different levels of care. Where neonates and toddlers were really focused on feeding and getting them started with development. But once we get to our Fontan age, we're really talking about long-term health and liver health and psychological health. And it's a lot more psychosocial dynamics and trying to teach teenagers about their hearts and how to advocate for themselves. And so they're two very, very different clinics, but we catch everybody between those two.
I met you at an NPCQIC / FON learning system show. How did you become involved in NPC?
Mm-hmm. So I think one of the most interesting things about NPCQIC and FON for me was all of those years that I spent bedside, I really didn't realize it existed, which I don't know if that's my fault that I didn't do enough research, or I think I was so engaged at the bedside and in that high acuity environment that it made it difficult to really seek out conferences and research and all of these outside things that I really didn't have a part in. So once I joined this ambulatory team, I realized that it is so important that these organizations exist, and that a lot of the things I was doing bedside and a lot of the things that I do now have come out of those programs. I have a very, very involved team with NPCQIC and FON. And so they've kind of helped mentor me as to what these organizations do, how to get involved. And I went to my very first conference last year, and it was really refreshing and inspiring and very hopeful to see how far we've come and how the opportunities and the things that await us in the future. I'm pretty excited about it.
Good deal. So it was your first learning session. Mm-hmm. What about that session really excited you?
I think it was really just the teamwork. I think that we always like to say congenital heart defects, it's 1 in 100. It's the most common birth defect. But when you get into the single ventricle population, it's a small proportion of that. And in order to do good work, we really have to communicate and work together. And I knew that was going on in the background before, but I didn't really understand the projects and how that was operationalized. So I think just seeing the respect that other centers have for each other and the fact that they truly are putting patients first, I loved that. That really spoke to me and engaged me. And I just loved that. I loved seeing that in action.
Good. So what things at that learning session did you like enough that you thought you wanted to bring it back?
We actually started our own parent advisory board after that session. So just really engaging our families was something that we took back. There were two other pieces that I was really interested in, especially on the FONTAN side, and that was the physical exercise and the liver health committees. I am really excited for the physical exercise research and things that they're going to be rolling out. I grew up an athlete, and I know how that impacted my mental and my physical health growing up and how important that can be for kids. And to be able to tell these single ventricle families that exercise is good, exercise will only help you, don't be afraid of it. I think starting that earlier and earlier is really going to set them up for success and help them live healthier lives, but also help them have confidence and make friends and feel normal as we can make them feel. So that was something I'm really excited for. And we have a lot of team members who are involved in that committee. So looking forward to seeing what education comes out for that and starting to really get our families interested and engaged in it.
Yeah, that's one of the areas I'm extremely interested in as well, because it seems to be like it went one year, it was sort of like, well, exercise looks like it's going to be a good way forward for increasing, you know, mm-hmm. oxygenation in the blood. And then the next year it was like, it's better than everything else. Like there's no drug we can give you that even comes close to the improvement you get with exercise. And then it was like, the next year it was like, no, like you have to, like, it's not even a, this is mm-hmm. a good thing. This is a, no. If you want your kid to thrive, you really need to have something. They need to be in sports. They need to be exercising regularly, that kind of a thing.
Well, and I think the interesting thing about that is that wasn't always our recommendation with this patient population. And I think that it's really challenging for these parents because, you know, when they're interstage and they're Norwoods, they're so fragile and they're so afraid. It's very easy to then keep their child in a bubble the rest of their life and protect them and not ask them to push themselves. And so I think it's going to take quite a bit of handholding and gentle nudging and education to help these parents feel confident that a kid running around and saying their heart's beating fast is because they're doing healthy exercise and not, oh my gosh, my child has an arrhythmia happening. So it's going to take some time, but I think it's going to be really, really awesome.
I agree. Are you yourself on any of the MPCQIC committees or learning teams or any of that?
I haven't joined a committee just because I don't quite feel that I am in the position yet to really provide valuable input there and really implement some changes. I think I'm still getting my feet under me in the position that I've started about a year ago and trying to navigate my way through that. But it was really inspiring. And I love seeing my team members really engage with it and make posters. And I'm just learning. I love learning. I'm really excited to learn. So I haven't officially signed myself up for anything yet. But once I figure out where my passion is, they won't be able to get rid of me. So.
Good. In your role and there with the single bench school folks, what do you kind of hope to accomplish kind of in the short term?
Yeah. Gosh, that's a loaded question. I feel in the short term, I really just want to continue to make a difference in as many lives as I can. I've learned very quickly in this job that the amount of barriers that families face, I could not even fathom between insurance and pharmacies and DME, like durable medical equipment companies, and all the phone calls and the, you know, I'm going to leave a voicemail, but I haven't heard back. And the things that these families face, and finances and parking on all these hospital visits, and they are losing their jobs because their child is sick. I feel like that has really made me very passionate about holding these families' hands and trying to make their lives as easy as I can, even if it's just a little bit. I want to continue that good work that my team has done such an amazing job with and keep trying to keep as many families afloat as I can. I think long term, I know it's kind of random, but I really am interested in the tech space in healthcare. And I've started to get my hands on wireless home monitoring devices and providing feedback and getting involved in that realm. And I just think that there's such an amazing future in that. And how can we get involved to help keep kids even safer at home, especially during that most critical period of that interstage time? I'm super excited about that. And I would really love to get more hands-on and engage those tech companies and give them some good insight into clinical life and what it's like to have a sick kiddo at home.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be nice.
Yeah.
I'm a big proponent of trying to use the tech we have to do things we're not doing with it. The things my Apple Watch does now, you know, it's constantly monitoring my blood oxygen saturation and my pulse, right? And all that data is going to some database somewhere. Well, you know, for me, it might be good someday to have that for when I develop chronic heart condition whatever it is when you get it later in life. For folks who have a congenital condition, you know, having that data as early as you can and having it for your whole life, it's useful for the whole span. And so trying to get tech companies to realize like how even the stuff they have now could be so very useful for so many people.
Yeah. There's so much out there for adults that they're trying to roll out and create. The pediatric realm of those devices is pretty small just because it's not as big of a moneymaker. There's, you know, it's harder to get research approved and rolling. So any companies that we have found who are willing to engage with us on the pediatric devices, we have just been thrilled to partner with and provide feedback and just some very exciting things that are in store for the future of medicine. I'm hopeful.
Good deal. So what do you kind of like personally hope to accomplish in this realm, in this single ventricle kind of world?
I feel like I never went into this for like personal accolades or, you know, I guess that never really was a thought in my mind of what am I going to get out of this or what am I going to really do. I feel like every single family and patient that I form a connection with is just so meaningful and rewarding to me. I love making a difference and I love making a positive difference in their lives. And I think that really is, it's so natural for me and it's so meaningful to me that I would really just love to be able to have longevity and continue to do that without being exhausted. You know,
wouldn't that be nice?
Yes, I think I would love to maintain contact with the world of congenital heart disease and continue to make a difference. And even as I shift areas in my career, whether I leave patient care and am more interested in the tech space, like I still always want to keep in mind that it all comes down to patients and families and that I'm not doing it for money. I'm not doing it for awards. It's really just about like what is best for these people. These babies are going to become grown adults. Fingers crossed. Like that's our goal, right? Is to have them become full people and capable individuals. And as many people as I can help through that journey, I would just love to be able to continue that for a really long time.
Good goal. I like it.
It's not a smart goal. It's not like measurable. It's not.
Yeah. Specific, so. Measurable, actionable.
That's how few of my goals actually meet that criteria. But
yeah, it's a good goal though. So let's say somebody's listening to this and they are interested in getting involved in helping. What kind of advice do you have for them? Mm-hmm.
I think really it's look at your community. I've learned about so many amazing foundations and groups who are parent driven, not just focused on, you know, research, but focused on things like helping parents pay for parking during their intensive care unit stay. Like there are ways that people can get involved and make a difference that isn't like attending a gala every year and spending hundreds of dollars. It's really just pop on the internet, find your local community and see how you can get involved. There's always options, especially for NPC, QIC, and FON. Like we have our virtual session coming up. Virtual session is free. So it's cool to be able to jump on and learn. And there's lots of opportunities like that. And if it's a family who's seeking out other families, I think that those connections are so desired and so important that finding those family connections make it easier to then go to a fundraising event together and not be alone. So I think it's find your tribe, put yourself out there, and you truly will be amazed at how people in this community are so full of love and just want to support each other and encourage each other and have their kids grow up and grow up happy. And those connections for the kids are so important as well. So I encourage people to just step outside of their comfort zone and ask for help, ask to go meet people, go to some events, see what's local, and I think they'll find good things there.
Good advice. Very good advice. All right. So at the end of the interviews, I typically ask a couple of curveball questions. So,
oh boy.
The first one, you don't have to answer it if you don't want to.
Okay.
Because it's a curveball. I didn't prep you beforehand. But the question is, so one of the reasons I started this podcast was because what I saw fairly continuously was people would be, you know, get the diagnosis in utero that, you know, you have a single ventricle child. And the doctor who was available to tell them about the diagnosis had probably read about HLHS 20 years prior in a textbook and was not aware of, you know, anything going on. And so a lot of times there's kind of a gloom and doom pronouncement to these parents. And so if you had somebody like that come to you, what would be your advice to them?
Well, I would tell them what I always try to remember to tell our families in our fetal counseling. So of course we have to talk about the worst case scenario, because it's only fair to give them all the information to make the best choice for themselves and their family. But I also always try to remind them that the best part of my day is when I get to go to the birthday parties and see them in clinic, and they're running around and they're being crazy toddlers and climbing all over the place and trying to slam their hand in the door. And I've got moody teenagers who I'm like, tell me about your heart. And they're like, oh, this is so obnoxious. Like, I love that. And that everybody's journey is going to be different and we can't predict most of it. But if you find the right institution, you will have a team behind you who will work with you to meet the goals that you have for your child. And that our goal is to give them the best quality of life we possibly can. And that they are the expert in their child, and that we're going to be having these conversations for a very long time. And I mean, they'll have heard that it's not all sunshine and roses, and it is a journey, and it is stressful, and it's not the normal journey, but that there are moments of joy and hope. And we wouldn't do what we did, what we do, our jobs, if it was all doom and gloom. We couldn't still be here. So it is those moments of joy that keep us going. So to try to keep that in their mind.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the answer. All right, last question. So Lurie, where is Lurie at?
Lurie Children's Hospital is in Chicago, Illinois. It used to be Children's Memorial Hospital, and then it moved to a different location and got a brand new building. So that is Lurie Children's.
Okay. So if I find myself in and around Lurie, where do I have to go eat?
Where do you have to go eat? Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, you can always get some pizza. There's literally a Geno's a block away from the hospital. I could give you a list of where to go eat, honestly. There's so many good places. It really just depends on what you want. It's like a walk to the river, and you've got all the places on the river. There's tons of restaurants, but I would say you probably should go to a good deep dish pizza place.
Okay. And your suggestion on that is Geno's?
I mean, Geno's is good. It's really close to the hospital, but you've also got Lou Malnati's. That would probably be my suggestion. That's probably one of my favorites.
Okay. Good deal. Figured to end on a little bit of a lightness.
Yeah. No, that's perfect.
Well, on behalf of everyone at the Mike and Mason Foundation, we want to thank you for coming on to the show. Really appreciate you sharing your story.
Thank you so much for having me. I could talk about congenital heart disease for hours. So happy somebody will listen to it.
Well, you're very welcome. Thank you.
Thanks.